Greetings, listeners and friends of RAOTC. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia, saying welcome to this broadcast for February 2019. I am Bruce Bathols, VK3UV, your presenter for this month. Firstly, the RAOTC committee hopes that you all have enjoyed a pleasant Christmas and New Year with family and friends, and now already we are well into 2019. The kids are back at school, and work is catching up with many of you again. Those of you who, like me, are retired can relax and enjoy amateur radio and all it offers. You know by now that this broadcast is carried on a range of frequencies on the first Monday morning of the month, except for January. However, please don't forget the repeat transmissions at night at 10:30 hours UTC on 80 metres in Melbourne and in Tasmania and via a telecast. These details can all be found on our webpage www.raotc.org.au, and we again thank all of our volunteers who relay this program at the various times. This broadcast file will be available for download from our website from tomorrow morning. Our final broadcast for 2018 was a bit of a disaster, for which we humbly apologise. We did not send out a signal on 20 metres due to no volunteer operators being available. Also, we had some audio and technical issues in the actual production of the audio file. If you are listening to me direct or via a download from our webpage, please remember that these broadcasts can only be transmitted on our advertised times if we have a volunteer member willing to do it. At the moment, we are struggling to find volunteers to fill in the gaps for 40 and 20 metres. If you can help with these from VK 2, 3, 5 or 7, please contact me via our website email, raotc@raotc.org.au. Also, any assistance from local repeater groups would be very much appreciated. Now, I would like to thank several members for their support in supplying short articles for inclusion in these broadcasts. John, VK3XM, Bill, VK3BR, Clive, VK6CSW. I now have access to all of the original issues of Amateur Radio magazine dating back to 1933, and all of the issues of OTN, plus a number of articles from other technical magazine that relates to our hobby, together with some pre-recorded articles from Ian VK3JS and Clive VK6CSW. There is a wealth of information in these old magazines, and I will attempt to fulfil the RAOTC charter in bringing articles of technical and historical interest to you, plus updates and changes in our technology, such as digital modes and issues with interference, etc. We are permitted to rebroadcast articles published in most overseas amateur publications, providing we acknowledge the source. And also, don't forget our local club bulletins. Quite often, a gem of an article gets published in a low-circulation magazine which could otherwise be the subject of an article for our broadcast. So, if you see something that you think would be appropriate, please send me an email with the details to vk3uv@wia.org.au or raotc@raotc.org.au. Thank you. We now advise of the following new members and trust that they will have an enjoyable time with ROTC. Bob Ecclestone, VK2ZRE, previous call signs VK2ZUI and VK1ZRE, became new ROTC full member number 1758 on the 13th of December 2018. Bob Coupland, VK4FRC, previous call signs VK4FRFC and VK4HRC, became new ROTC associate member number 1759 on the 13th of December 2018. Fred Luthi, HB9JW, became new ROTC full member number 1760 on the 13th of December 2018. Morris Rieger, VK5AMR, previous call sign VK5ZMR, became new ROTC full member number 1761 on the 21st of December 2018. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia. It is now with regret that I advise the passing of one of our members. Peter Drury, VK3JN, member number 1567, passed away on the 23rd of January 2019. Let us pause for a moment in memory of our departed member. Thank you. Here is an article of historical interest, which was first published in the Lyrebird of Winter 1978, which was X73 magazine, and published in our own amateur radio magazine of December 1978. It is entitled, How to Get the Stuff into the House. Unless your home operates on the kind of budget that permits sable coat, Christmas presents for the XYL, swimming pools for the kids, your own ski chalet, and casual weekend jetting to Acapulco or a Majorca, chances are you are up against a problem that has faced nearly every ham since Marconi. How to get the stuff into the house unseen, or, alternatively, how do you avoid telling her how much it cost? Over a period of some years of supporting several hobbies, and during which acquisitions of new and used cameras, lenses, fly rods, table saws, shotguns, sport cars, etc., to say nothing of radio gear, had to be explained, rationalised, lobbied, or even concealed. This practitioner has assembled a variety of ploys, some from personal experience and others from fellow hobbyists whose contributions I acknowledge with thanks and whose identities I had best keep to myself. In the hope that some fellow sufferer may herein find the solution to his particular problem, I have decided to compile and publish the best of these statements in which what might be called hammanship, or how to build your amateur radio station without actually shedding blood. Old masters of the game, AM types and single letter prefix gaffers, may find some of these tactics old hat. But they will realise that a whole new generation of amateurs has come along and, further, the problem of getting the stuff into the house without touching off domestic warfare has recalculated astronomically in these days of nearly 100% and store-bought stations. Even the newest novice, judging from the magazine photos, starts his career with an array of commercial gear that looks like the control panel of an Apollo moonship. These new hams need our help. Let us share with them our secrets and our methods. The future, possibly even the survival, of amateur radio may well be involved. One word of caution before we begin the lesson. Do not, Repeat, do not leave this lying about the house for her to read. Commit these pages to memory and then rip them out and either burn them or put them in an envelope and mail to Box 88, Moscow. That way they'll never be heard of again. Now, then, 1. This calls for the breezy, offhand treatment. You bring in the new scope, linear, Kia, or whatever it is, and before she can start with, how much did that cost? You cry happily, boy, you couldn't have beat this for $15, or what figure the traffic will bear. Remember, you didn't say you paid only $15 for it, just that you couldn't beat it for $15, and that's the gospel truth. 2. The old mule trader ploy. You come gaily into the house with your latest treasure, a smug grin on your face, and admit something like, wow, look what I traded old Haywire Maggie out of for my old rotator. Never mind mentioning that you also forked over $250 in addition to that old rotator to make the trade. 3. A variation of number 2. Your line is, can you imagine the dope letting this go for only $35? You sure can't. His rock-bottom price was $150, and that's what you coughed up, but you didn't say you paid $35. Another variation. You take the old rig to your friendly local ham dealer who sells used gear on consignments for a commission. A few weeks later, you report happily, some guy bought my old rig and I got enough for it to get this new one. Yeah, enough maybe for the down payment, but who needs to know? You still owe the friendly local, etc., $398.80. 5. Become a home brewer. Spend long hours in the basement workshop. Cut lots of scrap metal loudly. Drill lots of holes. Bang chassis around, let the smell of soldering and scorched insulation permeate the house. Study schematics at the dinner table. On the air, talk loudly about the linear you're building. After 2 or 3 weeks of this, come proudly upstairs with the new rig, or whatever. Stripped of nameplate, of course, or even without front panel. Some time later, you can acquire a cabinet or front panel for it and, look honey, this old Collins, or Heath, or Swan, or whatever, panel I picked up that just fits the rig. Looks real commercial, doesn't it? You need a garage or workshop where you can cache the parts of a beam for this one. Then you can make a big show of going into the shop with an armload of old aluminium tubing, busted TV antennas, etc. Emerge some days later after the usual drilling and sawing noises with the elements of your new tri-band beauty and see what I lashed up? Amazing what you can do with a bunch of old aluminium. 7. Your XYL has been bugging you about getting a new colour TV, so you agree to buy a new one if you can have the old one for parts. Show her those great articles about how you can build a 5-band KW receiver with the parts scrounged from old TVs. You'd be surprised, and you hope she will be too, at the nifty new frequency counter, oscilloscope, or whatever you dream of, you were able to build with those old TV parts, plus a few odds and ends from Heathkit, maybe. Many other suggestions were included in this article were considered and discarded for such reasons as requiring outright lying, but being too impractical or far-fetched, or too susceptible of detection. Others simply were variations of one or more of the above, such as disassembling a whiz-bang 2000 at a friend's shack and then bringing it home piece by piece in pocket-sized components, or installing a new KWM2 in your old Viking 1 cabinet. None of those so far mentioned, however, can top the one reported by a ham who of necessity shall remain unidentified here. At the time the first colour TV was acquired for the family, he convinced the XYL that only a 60-foot tower and a super-duper-sized king-size antenna would bring in the colour picture in their location. To this day, she thinks that the three-element trap lightning bird tribanger is what makes Doris Day pretty. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old-Timers Club of Australia. We now introduce Clive, VK6CSW, who is no stranger to us, to present an article called The Art of Secret Communication. Thanks, Clive.
The Art of Secret Communication by Herman Willemsen, XVK2IXV. The art of creating, sending and receiving secret encoded messages has always been a tale of intrigue and of military campaigns that succeeded or failed, depending on whether an enemy interceptor could break the code. In World Wars I and II, many different techniques were used to convey and code messages, such as capsules attached to carrier pigeons, cipher wheels, disguising intelligence in daily newspapers or radio broadcasts, poem codes, cryptic material on silk, enigma machines, and Native American languages. Some of the methods will be described here. Pigeon service. In World War I, thousands of homing pigeons were used by Allied and German infantry, tank divisions, warships and aircraft to conduct surveillance and relay messages to the front. To pass on messages in World War I, the use of pigeons instead of wireless was more reliable, because wireless at that time was primitive and still underdeveloped. Small messages would be inserted into a canister attached to the pigeon's leg, and larger messages, such as maps, photos, and detailed reports, in a cigar-shaped capsule attached to the pigeon's back. Very few messages were coded because the success rate of pigeons reaching their destinations was about 95%. Once the pigeon was released, it would fly over enemy territory back to its loft near divisional headquarters, where the message would be interpreted. Homing or carrier pigeons could fly up to 400 kilometres a day with an average speed of around 72 kilometres an hour. Just like soldiers, pigeons went MIA, or missing in action, became prisoners of war, and received medals for bravery. Although radio communications had improved considerably in World War II, pigeons were still used, but only as backup communications. During World War II, the Australian Army used more than 10,000 pigeons in New Guinea and in the Pacific Theatre because, due to the rugged terrain and, at times, heavy QRN, wireless communications often failed. The use of poems as a radio code. The poem code, used in World War II by British Special Operations Executive operatives, was a method whereby the sender and receiver pre-arranged a poem to use for their code. The poems were the grids upon which the messages could be coded and decoded. To prevent detection, the code would be transmitted in the shortest possible bursts of Morse code from the agent's portable spy radio. Because agents had to memorize their poems, there was a temptation to use popular ones from Shakespeare, Keats, etc., or quotes from the Bible. The Germans knew this and would eventually crack a poem code, especially if an agent used the same words of the poem repeatedly. When, in 1942, Leo Marx was in charge of agent codes, he recognized the weaknesses of the present poem code technique. He enhanced the security by making the agents use their own unpublished poems, including poems written by Marx himself. In 1944, Marx supplied the famous female agent Violette Zsasbo with one of his own poems to be used as a radio code. Zaspo's wartime activities in occupied France were dramatized in the 1958 movie Carve Her Name with Pride. Cryptic material on bits of silk cloth. Because parachute silk was in such short supply, Leo Marx had a lot of trouble persuading the establishment that the use of the relatively insecure poem code should be stopped and replaced by the safer method of cryptics photographed onto silk. The use of a code on silk was far more secure because an agent, after transmitting a code group, would tear it off and burn it. In addition, a silk cloth could be easily concealed within clothing and be undetectable if an agent was bodily searched. Leo Marx told the bureaucrats that there were only two choices, silk or cyanide. In other words, use silk or expect more deaths of SOE agents behind enemy lines. His remark became the title of his memoirs, Between Silk and Cyanide, A Codemaker's War, 1941-1945, published in 1998. The Enigma Machine. German Enigma machines were portable cipher machines used to code and decode secret messages. Although the machines were initially designed for commercial use only, at the outbreak of World War II, they were utilized by all branches of the German Wehrmacht to secure their communications. The Enigma machine had a typewriter keyboard and rotary letter wheels which coded the message. More information on and pictures of Enigma machines can be found on the web, or perhaps you might like to visit the Powerhouse Museum in Sydney, where an Enigma machine is on display. The German Enigma code was finally cracked by SOE codebreakers at Bletchley Park. Native American language as a military code. In World Wars I and II, Native Indian languages answered the US Marine Corps' requirement for an undecipherable code. They were unwritten languages of extreme complexity and unintelligible to anyone without extensive exposure and training. They had no alphabet or symbols and were spoken only by a few Native Indian tribesmen. During the Second World War in the Pacific, bilingual Navajo speakers were recruited by the American Marines and called code talkers. The Navajo language became the secret weapon of the US Marine Corps against Japan. The code talker's primary job was to transmit, via radio telephony, information on tactics, troop movements, orders, and other vital battlefield information. They also acted as messengers, as well as performing general marine duties. During World War II, about 540 Navajos served as Marines and about 400 of those trained as code talkers, whilst the rest served in other capacities. Now some footnotes. The SOE is the Special Operations Executive set up by the British wartime Prime Minister Mr. Churchill. Its mission was to encourage and facilitate espionage and sabotage behind enemy lines. In World War II, more than 50 female SOE agents operated behind enemy lines. The cyanide pill was the agent's operational extra if captured. It had an important psychological value to persons carrying out missions with a high risk of capture and interrogation. The life expectancy of an agent behind enemy lines averaged about 3 weeks. The word enigma is from the Greek meaning puzzle or something inexplicable.
Thanks, Clive. To finish up with this month's broadcast, here is a short item on digital mode FT8.
Flex Radio CEO Gerald Youngblood K5SDR has suggested that FT8 has attained killer app or tipping point status in amateur radio. The protocol permits working stations on seemingly dead bands, countering the current dearth of sunspots, Youngblot pointed out, and also lets operators of modest or antenna-restricted stations to work HFDX, just like the big guns. In my humble opinion, FT8 is at the very heart of what amateur radio has been about from its inception. Amateurs who love the art of radio enhancing the art of radio, Youngblot wrote. He continued, speculating, what will ultimately kill amateur radio is not FT8. To the contrary, FT8 is an example of what will keep it alive and relevant. What will kill amateur radio is if we cease to innovate, become old and grumpy, and no longer bring new blood into the hobby. Gerald believes that digital modes such as FT8 can significantly boost contact and multiplier totals in contests that permit its use, not to mention in efforts to gain DXCC and other awards. How best to merge digimodes into your operating plan, along with CW and SSB? It will be different for each station and each operator, he said.
I now continue our long-standing practice of these broadcasts to finish off with something humorous. So here is today's offering. My grandfather told me that he saw the Titanic, and that from the beginning he warned all the people that the ship would sink, but nobody listened to him. He was a brave man. He did not give up. He warned them on several occasions until they kicked him out of the cinema. Thank you for listening. This concludes our session for this month. We shall be back with you on Monday, the 4th of March, 2019. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia, saying 73, and listening now for any check-ins and callbacks.